He'll be at the site of the marquee matchup this week as the defending national champs invade Blacksburg. You can find his work for USA Today, well, in the paper, online, usatoday.com, the Twitter handle at George Schroeder. A good afternoon to you, sir. How you doing, George?
Man, I'm good. And let me just say this. I do think it's the marquee matchup, but nobody should sleep on Pac-12 After Dark Friday night, USC at Washington State. That could be a whale of a game, too.
No, just by the numbers and incorporating the national view.
Fair enough.
All right, well, thank you. If you deem me fair, I sleep well.
Well, it's just a figure of speech.
Nice. We'll get to basketball mess in a bit, but for years Frank Beamer had Virginia Tech among the country's better programs. From the Big East, he played for a national title in the ACC, Orange Bowl, Sugar Bowls, and then prior to last year he stepped away. Enter Justin Fuente, who did such good work at Memphis, and then at Vatech, won 10 games, top 25 to open this year. And George, I know it's early, but it just seems like this has been a very smooth transition, which is not always the case.
Yeah, well, it definitely has been. I mean, you know, Justin Fuente obviously had built a really nice program at Memphis, but I don't know that anybody really expected it to be such a quick rebuild at Virginia Tech. For all the good things Frank Beamer had done, the program had slid a little bit and was clearly behind the marquee teams in the ACC, and I think that's still the case, but they seem to be on an upward trajectory.
No, I agree with that, and also, let's not forget, they beat Old Dominion, Delaware, East Carolina. Nice opener against West Virginia. Now it's Clemson, and I've talked about the Tigers so-so last week against Boston College, but then they end up winning going away. They allow 238 yards. They beat Louisville. Florida State has issues. It seems like maybe they have a trip to North Carolina State as a roadblock. Any logic to somebody better get them now? Because if this offense finds its footing, watch out.
Well, yeah, there's definitely logic to it. I think this is a pretty big game, though. I mean, we don't really know how good the Hokies are. I mean, they're unbeaten. But Lane Stadium at night is going to be rocking. And it's one of the places, great home field advantages in college football. Obviously, one of them is a few blocks from where you are right now. Lane Stadium's one of them, too. And maybe it doesn't get its due because they hadn't played quite as many high-profile games. You couple that with a good defense, which they always have, and then you add in sort of just what appears to be a pretty nice team with a freshman quarterback in Josh Jackson who can really play, and it feels like the kind of place that could be an upset trap. And it shouldn't be a trap game. I mean, if you're Clemson, you need to understand this is one of those teams on the schedule that can definitely beat you. But especially if you, by the way, were tied 7-all with BC a week ago going into the fourth quarter and then pulled away at 134-7. But yeah, no, I think you're right. This is definitely, there aren't going to be that many that legitimately have a shot to beat Clemson. I'm not writing off Florida State as a spoiler at this point. I mean, they're not going to the playoff. But what I saw out of them against Alabama was a team that matched up physically with Alabama on both sides of the football. And then they made three critical special teams errors. And, of course, when they lost DeAndre Francois, they were not only finished for that game, but they were potentially finish as a playoff contender for the season, but they still have that same kind of physical talent, so they could definitely upend some people. But yeah, that's the two, really. You mentioned NC State. I'm not ready to go there yet.
We're talking with George Schroeder of USA Today. Well, one of my pet teams, Oklahoma State, fell to TCU, and I know you think Gary Patterson, it's usually about the defense, and the numbers you look at, they gave up 398 passing yards for Mason Rudolph with two TDs. It sounds good, but if you take a closer look, he was just over 50%, three interceptions. How good of a job did that Horned Frog defense do limiting such an explosive offense?
Well, I thought they did a really nice job. You know, first of all, it did start with their offense, which controlled the clock for the ball for more than 39 minutes, and that's a nice way to go. If you're going to keep a talented offense off the field, that helps your defense a ton. That said, their defense was really good. They basically played a bunch of cover two safeties deep, and didn't allow but really one big chunk play over the top, which is what Oklahoma State does so well. to that bevy of wide receivers, starting with James Washington. But so they did a real nice job with that, and they kind of majored on denying the deep pass. And yet, Oklahoma State, and I think part of this is Oklahoma State's stubbornness, and it's a problem with their play calling. TCU really never committed more than six people into the box. They never pushed the seventh guy up into the box, they never really pushed the sixth guy into the box, which is what you see. So they basically didn't commit the extra guys for the run to stop the run. And so at that point, that's when you've got to say, all right, we're going to run the ball till you stop us. And I didn't think Oklahoma State did a very good job play calling of that. But I also thought TCU's defensive line did a nice enough job against Oklahoma State's ailing offensive line that maybe that wouldn't matter too much. But it was a masterful defensive game plan by a coach who's known for that. So I do think their defense had a ton to do with it.
A quick thought on Alabama. You see 59-0, and you think, well, it's Vanderbilt. But then you run the numbers. They allowed three first downs. They outgained the Commodores by almost 600 yards. I even saw Nick Saban smile. How much of an eye-popping performance is that, even for a program like Alabama defensively?
Well, look, if you're going to say it's only Vanderbilt, then you have to pretend like you didn't spend the last week, and I don't mean you specifically, that you didn't spend the last week pumping up Vanderbilt as a pretty good team that's not like your old Vanderbilt team that's got a really good defense and might really slow Alabama down and this, that, and the other. Now, I didn't expect Vanderbilt to win because I didn't think they had an offense that could score much. And by the way, this is not a vintage Alabama defense. I'm just not impressed with Vanderbilt's offense. But I did not expect Alabama to just run the ball right down their throats all night long and score that many points. And I don't know that anybody did. What's interesting is Alabama basically churned up some faux outrage, and I really think made it work. And they played angry, and I think that was a pretty impressive performance. Now, I don't think they're going to play angry most games. And by the way, against some opponents, doesn't matter if they play angry; it's going to be a much tighter game. But against Vanderbilt, and after coming off for a couple of lackluster efforts in the previous couple of games, it worked as well. It was as impressive a victory over an opponent that's not quite as overmatched as it looks, as we've seen all year.
Talking with George Schroeder, USA Today, you wrote about one of my favorite subjects, replay, the change during the season, now more centralized for each conference, and it came into play with Texas A&M versus Arkansas in that second quarter when the Aggie quarterback, Kellen Mond, ran for a long touchdown. The side judge ruled he stepped out at the 10. Now, you were actually in the replay center. I'd be very curious as to kind of what happened next and why was it so frustrating?
Well, there were a bunch of primal screams in there. Not really. But so first of all, I guess that we should set this up. The SEC started last year with what's known as an experiment, but basically it all counts, where instead of just having the replay official in the booth, they've got three replay officials in Birmingham who are, veteran officials of the game who are no longer on the field, much like the replay officials are. And they collaborate with the official who's in the booth on site. So in this case, at Jerry World in Arlington, Texas, AT&T Stadium, whatever. And so they collaborate, and the four of them, one of them on site, three of them in Birmingham inside the SEC offices, determine what to do on reviews. In this case, they couldn't do anything about it because the rules state if a runner is ruled out of bounds, called out of bounds, whistled out of bounds, and the play is then the play is dead, and you can't review it. And the reason is because the guy has whistled the play dead, and you can't. It'd be an awful gray area if you had replay officials, whether they're on site at the stadium or in Birmingham, 600 miles away, suddenly start telling you that they know whether the defender continued to play hard after a whistle. Because, how do you determine whether they let up or not, right?
Right.
And so, to me, it's a gray area that it makes sense that they can't rule on that. It was a terrible blown call on the field. So, the first answer to your question is, it made everybody in the replay center, they're all affiliated with the Southeastern Conference except for me, sick to their stomachs, because they, you know, it's one of their refs blowing a really easy call on the field. And then worse, they can't do anything about it by rule, even though they'd like to. So I'm sitting next to Steve Shaw, who's their coordinator of officials. He's also the supervisor or the secretary slash rules editor for the NCAA Football Rules Committee. And look, he did everything but bury his head in his hands. He didn't do that, but that's how he felt. It was pretty clear. Because, you know, it's just, oh, I can't believe we missed that call. And now, even more frustrating, we can't fix that call.
No question about it. By the way, that experience, I mentioned you were there. I mean, like we said, there actually is no sports bar red button for the conspiracy theorists.
Yeah.
How did you find that overall operation as far as efficiency, as they try to get these calls right and in a timely fashion?
Look, they do try to do them fast. And so last year, I think they averaged 128, a minute 28, the SEC did in its replay reviews in that first year under that new arrangement. And they felt like that was too long. They want to try to get it down. They won't tell you what their goal is, but they want it to be shorter than that. I don't know what their average was on Saturday when I was in there, but they really moved quickly. So basically, each of the three replay officials that are in Birmingham has a designated game he's watching. When play gets stopped, either by that official in Birmingham or by the replay official in on site, then the other two replay officials in Birmingham move over and the three of them collaborate looking at the thing. And then they're looking also with the guy who's on site. So you've got four trained guys who are doing this job together. And they really see all these things pretty quickly and process what's going on. And I was pretty impressed with how quickly they got it done and how many times they got it right in a real quick hurry.
No, that sounds like a fascinating thing to observe. I want to get to the basketball scandal. We know about four assistants arrested, Rick Pitino pretty much out at Louisville, agents, money managers, sneaker manufacturers, the Fed saying they've got the playbook. I've heard tip of the iceberg. So could we play the speculation game? How logical is to think that, you know, beyond death at Baylor, rapes, or what happened at Penn State, that this can become just a scandal of epic proportions maybe not seen before?
Yeah, well, in the sort of, you know, if we place those other two that you mentioned in a sort of a separate category.
Yeah.
If you just want to talk about sort of breaking NCAA regular old rules, like, you know, paying players and doing things like that are against NCAA rules, this has every chance to be the largest, most consequential, biggest scandal that they've ever had. And going back to maybe the late 50s when they had a big point shaving scandal that basically led to the creation at that point of the NCAA's enforcement staff, which is their investigatory arm.
Right.
This might be that kind of consequential. And I don't know what that means because none of us knows if they're going to roll up five more guys or 25 more guys. Nobody really knows. And some of it may be determined, you know, depends on what the guys they've already gotten decide to say. But it's really possible that you could have a ton of programs and coaches in big trouble. It's possible that you could have a bunch of blue chip athletes ineligible. And by the way, it's also possible that Adidas isn't going to be the only shoe company. That other shoe companies, and I know there's a giant shoe company that looms large over Eugene, that those could be in trouble too at some point. And so there are a whole lot of people in and around the sport of college basketball. And by the way, that's before we ever get to college football, which is, its corruption is a little bit different kind of than what college's basketball
right,
is.
Right.
But if the Feds get excited about that, they might find some stuff there. So I don't think any of us knows, but it could be huge.
Now, lastly, I mean, you know, we've all followed the college game for a while, and we've talked about, and they've had the point-shaving scandals, you know, Headache Smith at Arizona State, Reggie Bush with, you know, his parents getting a free house. But for the most part, that's NCAA handling the investigation and doling out the punishment, you know, maybe 5 years later. When you heard the Feds were involved and they conducted raids and made multiple arrests, how big of an alarm did that set off?
Well, personally, I felt okay, but I think it's sort of a big rut-row. Here we go, right? I mean, it is a big, big deal. Now, look, the NCAA is going to come in behind, and they're going to use the stuff that the Fed developed, and they're going to add NCAA penalties to all this stuff. So, you know, and what's going to be interesting to me is if there's going to be some stuff that maybe doesn't rise to the level that the Fed would charge, but that the NCAA ends up finding out about through this, which could happen too, I think, and they get in trouble for that. But, you know, look, when they got involved, it's so different than you being worried about the NCAA. First of all, the NCAA penalties aren't going to be that severe usually compared to what, you know, going to prison for years and years and years. But secondly, it's, and there was a lot of snark on Twitter today and yesterday about, wow, the feds finally do it, the NCAA would never do it. Well, look, there is some question that's legitimate occasionally as to whether the NCAA has the desire to really go after people. I occasionally question that myself. I think generally they do have the desire, but it's really hard for them to prove stuff. Because here's what they don't have that the feds have. They don't have subpoena power.
Yep.
They can't compel you to talk if you're not affiliated with the school. If you're not a staff member or an eligible athlete, they don't have anything to hold over your head, right? So they can't compel you to talk. Steve, if they came to talk to you, you could say, I'm not talking. They couldn't do anything about it. You wouldn't get in any trouble, which would be a good thing because you have all sorts of skeletons. But if they – and here's the other thing. If they also can't wiretap you, and they can't threaten you with prison time. So all those things, when the feds finally got interested, make it a whole lot easier for them to roll up people than the NCAA to. But, I mean, this is a crazy consequential thing, potentially.
No, and we're at day two. So
I was kidding about the skeletons in your closet, by the way.
No, my first thought was, I think we have the only recording of this, which will be destroyed after this show. Yes, George Schroeder, USAtoday.com, at George Schroeder on Twitter. You travel safe to Blacksburg, and as always, we look forward to chatting again next week. Thanks, George.
Yeah, thank you, guys. Take care.
All right, take it easy.